So just to spend a few minutes on the fourth Aliyah of Miketz, where we find the reunion, the first part of the reunion of Yosef and his brothers. And just to say a few general words about it, and we're not going to go pasuk by pasuk, but just to make a few points. So when we find this interaction, which is going to, as we know, be complex and is going to spread out from this week's parsha away into next week's parsha, or at least you know, to the beginning of next week's parsha, that, well, really, the nature of this interaction begins here and extends to the end of Sefer Bereishis, and very crucially, towards the very end of Sefer Bereishis, but it's going to be a long path, and it's going to be a little baffling to watch some of the behavior of Yosef, who we understand Yosef HaTzadik to be somebody who we look up to, and one could get the impression that he's somewhat manipulating and maybe even, to a certain extent, torturing and inflicting a lot of anguish on his brothers. And there's a lot to try to understand about what's going on here and a lot of discussion. And I would just recommend as reading. So Marina Rosenzweig Shlita has an important article about this in the volume Mitoch Ohel, which comes highly recommended. But the first volume of Mitoch Ohel, which is on the Parsha, so Rabbi Rosenzweig wrote about this week's Parsha, I believe, about Parshas Miketz, and he talks about this whole theme, and this is something Rav Hirsch also talks about in his writings, and others discuss. Rav Vital Brudinsky will mention, I have a sefer here, he talks about this here and elsewhere. But the theme that there is ultimately, hopefully, a reconciliation between Yosef and his brothers. I say hopefully because there's some ambiguity about that also. It's really a complex discussion about just to what extent there is a complete rapprochement between Yosef and the brothers. Is there really a mechila? And we mentioned last week the whole question of intent and result, and Yosef telling the brothers that whatever you had in mind, the Kadosh Baruch Hu had different plans, and is that meant to say it's okay, it doesn't matter, or you're not okay? There's a lot that needs to be understood about that, and that's a little bit beyond our scope for today. But a part of the notion seems to be that in order to reach a place of true reconciliation, so it can't just be a facile forgiveness and just saying, whatever, it doesn't matter, forget it, but there needs to be a appreciation that there has been growth and development and that things have changed, and also that there is a real understanding of what was wrong in the first place. And so putting them through this experience, which is designed, among other things, to assess whether there has been regret and there has been an understanding of what went wrong the first time. This is a theme throughout, so we can just talk a little beyond this. So, for example, there's a very powerful pasuk in next week's parsha that, and I think I made reference to this in a different context recently, so I'll just mention again, we talked about this when we were talking about other things, but that pasuk in the beginning of Vayigash, where the Medrash, the fantastic Medrash that has yielded so many wonderful Divrei Torah, so many different takes on this Medrash, and each one is worth pondering and thinking about carefully. But that line of Elonim Yom Hadin, Elonim Yom Tochacha, that the Medrash says that we have to be really amazed at the power of Tochacha and rebuke, because look how the brothers were blown away when Yosef said to them, Ani Yosef Ora Vichai. And it's hard to understand where there's Musar there. Where's the Tochacha? He just identified himself. And the Beis Halevi is among the many terrific interpretations of that Medrash, where he says that Yosef was teaching a powerful lesson to the brothers, because Yehuda was making this whole speech about how can we go back without Binyamin, and it's going to be terrible, my father's not going to survive that, being deprived of his beloved son. So to that, Yosef's reaction is, really, really, you think that's going to be so difficult, and you're so sensitive to this, you care so much about not holding back his beloved son from your father, and you're so worried about what's going to happen, will he survive that? Well, guess what? Ani Yosef, I'm the one who you sold into slavery all those years ago when I was the beloved son. And did he survive that? So that whole process is probably representative of a lot of what's going on here, that yes, maybe there can be a reconciliation, hopefully there can be a forgiveness, but it comes in the context of understanding that there has to really be an appreciation of what happened. And that there has to also be a sense that things have changed. So the focus on fraternal connection, on brotherly love, that is brought out through some of these nisyonos is some of this whole trial by ordeal that is being imposed on them is a big part of the message. So to keep that in mind, and we won't be able to see all the details of this today, but to keep that in mind as we think about this Aliyah and about the Aliyahs that all follow it, so that's an important appreciation. So just to make a few quick notes about some of the ideas that show up in the Psukim. So the situation becomes bad, that there becomes a reality of famine throughout the world, and the Gemara in Psachim understands, the Gemara in Daf Kuf Yutes Amud Aleph understands that it was really a famine throughout the world. So that language that's here in the end of Parak Mem Aleph, in Parak Mem Aleph, Pasuk Mem Zayin, says, V'chol ha'aretz bo Mitzrayim l'lishbor al-Yosef, ki chazak harav v'chol ha'aretz, and that means literally everywhere, all the food that was available was all in Mitzrayim, was all under the control of Yosef, which it's really a phenomenal thing to think about, just what kind of reversal there is here and what kind of power is being concentrated. So the Perek Membeis here begins with Vayar Yaakov Ki Yeshevim Mitzrayim. And Yaakov saw that there was some hope, that there was some event, there was some relief available with food that was in Mitzrayim. So Chazal pick up on that also as a Medrash, that the idea of Vayar Yaakov, Yaakov saw, what does that mean, he saw? He saw it on Facebook, he saw it on the internet, he saw it on the news, how did he see? So maybe
on Instagram.
Instagram, yeah, so how did he see? So presumably he was told, he heard, why do we use the language of Vayar? So Chazal comments here that this is a part of the idea that there is this incomplete nevuah that Yaakov continued to have, that he was still in touch with Ruach HaKodesh, but he clearly wasn't perfect because he wasn't being informed of Yosef's survival all this time. So he didn't really know everything that was going on, but he had still some degree of Ruach HaKodesh, and he was aware, he saw, that there was a situation of food availability in Mitzrayim. And Rav Soloveitchik also commented that he thought a part of the idea of the seeing was that it's not just that he was aware that there was food, but that there was a chachma that was being brought to the situation that was evocative of his grandfather, that was evocative of Avram Avinu, and that Avram's influence is somehow playing out in this context of Mitzrayim, and that's what's allowing the world to be sustained. So that provokes this question, what's going on? And we have to explore and see how that could possibly be, that the continuing power of Avram's insight is somehow playing out in this context of Mitzrayim. So here there's also a important phrase here, that at the end of this pasuk, so Yaakov tells his sons that they should go, but first you have this phrase here, Lama Tisro. So what does that mean, Lama Tisro? So here, Chazal have a comment, the Gemara Maseches Tainis, and Daf Yudam Mit Beis, and Rashi quotes it in his own way, but the language is, Amr Lehem Yaakov Levonov, Al Tiru Atzmechem Kishatam Sivayim, Lo Bifnei Esav, Lo Bifnei Shmol, Kideshul Yekanu Bochem. That's the Lashon of the Gemara. And it is evocative of a major concept that it's important not to try to evoke jealousy and not to try to look like you are better off than other people, because that brings about all kinds of problems. And I think we also maybe made reference to this a little bit last week, talking about the notion of Ayin Hara. So it's related to that as well, whether we look focus on a mystical interpretation, a supernatural interpretation, or also just the real world rational effects. That when there is a image that is projected, which it's part of the Yetzer Hara to want to project this image of success and superiority, but the reality is that that is a Yetzer Hara because it does not do anything positive for you, and it does evoke jealousy from others, and that's harmful. Hi.
And it's funny, it's a little bit ironic because this whole situation only took off, only started because Yaakov sort of like favored Yosef. Mm-hmm. So it's like a little bit ironic.
Yeah, no, it's more than that. So that's the thing. So that's also a part of the themes here. And you mentioned last week also the idea that Chazal have that Yosef is able to overcome the Ayin Hara, which seems harder to appreciate if it seems like Yosef was actually one of the biggest, most prominent victims of this whole mindset. But maybe the fact that Kadosh Baruch Hu's Hashgacha ultimately puts it in a different direction, that's what it means, he overcomes the Ayin Hara. But it's certainly the case that that's the problem, that there's a kinah here that causes this issue. And here Yaakov is now telling the sons, don't show off, don't act in a way that's going to make people jealous. And it's also perhaps the explanation, I think some point out, that it's interesting here, the why bring up Esav, as the Gemara does and Rashi does also, that you shouldn't show off, lo b'fnei Esav, lo b'fnei Yishmael, k'dei shlo yikana b'chem. If you don't show off, they shouldn't be jealous. So why bring up Esav? What does Esav have to do with anything? It's not the context of what's going on here now, except that it is evocative of the history also of Yaakov and Esav, and Yaakov himself is aware of this, of just how much presenting this picture of success and of being favored, perhaps, in front of his brother, has caused him complications in his life, and this is something that continues to endure throughout history. And it's also a part of what Yaakov was trying to offset in Parshat Vayishlach, as we saw, and that even as he was trying to walk the tightrope of, yes, I'm successful, like you value that, but you should also not take it as something that's a reason for jealousy, and that I'm no better off than you, and trying to have that message calibrated to that point, in order to try to offset this strong sense of jealousy, is something that's going to continue to plague us in our relationship with Esav and relationship with us in general. As Kliyaker, that Rabbi Willig is always fond of quoting in the summertime in Rosh Hakol, this summertime, the beginning of Sefer Devarim, that the notion of Pnu Lachem Tzafon, that Kliyaker has that comment, you should turn inward, that you shouldn't look to try to display your success and try to evoke the jealousy of others, which you may think is admiration, but often is a more negatively directed kind of attitude, and to appreciate just what are the harms that come from that. So that's one level of interpretation of Lama Tisrael. The other is interpretation as well. This Naim Latara has a comment here that they were looking at each other, because each one thought, okay, so who's going to go? And that Yaakov was trying to say, it's not going to be one of you, it's going to be all of you. Soloveitchik understood that this is a reflection of the fact that they were starting to appreciate that they're seeing history play out. That once they realize they're being directed towards Egypt, then they start to feel a little queasy and thinking, okay, this is not sounding so great for us. And so they're all looking at each other in guilt. That's a part of that process. But this notion, that's a comment that the Zayin Torah has as well. And Rav Hirsch emphasized this idea that they thought that each one was looking at the other, that they could be the one to go. And Yaakov was saying that they all have to go. It's interesting also because the fact that the 10 of them go, right, that's the next pasuk, V'yerdu achi Yosef asara. So it's all of them except Yosef, not there clearly, but also Binyamin gets to stay home. So it's the 10 oldest brothers. So Rav Yonasan Eibshitz has a comment over here, one of his commentaries on Chumash, that you might think it's interesting that it plays out that way because there is a halacha, the Gemara says in Ksuvis, there is a din of kavod for an older brother. So presumably if there's a job that has to be done, so the younger brother should do it for the older brother. And here you have the youngest brother, he gets to stay home, and there's all the 10 oldest brothers, they have to go do this mission. So why exactly is that? So Yonasan Eibshitz has two answers to this. And it has to do a little bit with understanding this din of respecting the older brother. So as a machlokas, the Rambam and the Ramban, why that din is there. Now the Rambam understands that it's a din in Bechor, that we want to respect the fact that the Bechor is like a third parent. He's Yoresh Gedulas Ovid. But the Ramban, and his Asagas and the Sefer HaMitzvahs, the Ramban understands that it's just a prat, in Kibbut Aveim, that you should want to do what the parents want as a part of how we're mechabed them. So presumably most parents want that the younger should respect the older, that there should be some kind of a hierarchy like that. So if it's all about what the parents want, so then it makes sense that the parents are going to have priorities. So here it could be that, yes, there were 10 older brothers, but there's one father who wanted Yom to stay home and the other brothers to go. So the one father should outweigh the 10 older brothers. There's also a very creative interpretation that he has there, that he suggests that the Chi of Kavod is only towards a brother from the same mother. And that's pshat, the pasuk says later, that Binyamin is described with the phrase, Vayibaser hu levado leimo, that he's the only one left to the same mother. If Yosef's not there, so then Binyamin doesn't have any brothers from the same mother. So that's considered to be a notion of the respect only going in that direction. So it's a very interesting idea why that should be, and it's not according to other. That's not according to either sheet. It doesn't work according to the Rambam or according to the Ramban, because you would think according to the Rambam, it's a din in brothers from the same father, and a din in Bechor specifically, and according to the Ramban, it should be from either parent. So it's a unique kind of shita. Now, why that is, it could be there's an explanation that, based on Avionis and Eibshitz elsewhere, El Shita, so it's a much longer explanation, but it's just a fascinating nekuda that is also perhaps tied into some of the themes of this parsha. There's a lot to say, we won't be able to cover everything, but just to mention also just some ideas generally, but the idea of Yosef Hu HaShalit HaLaaretz Hu HaMashbir L'chol HaAm HaAretz. So there's that arts again. So Yosef here is the ruler over the land, and he is the mashvir. He is the one who provides the food. We know the supermarket in Eretz Yisrael is called the mashvir. He's the one who provides the food for everyone. So here the commentaries also note that there's a couple of interesting things here. That, first of all, this is evocative of Yosef's dreams. The Chavetz HaSharon has a reference to that. That here he's both the mashbir, that's the evocative of the alumas, of the sheaves, and also the idea that he was going to be the ruler. But also, Hirsch points out that he's doing both roles is a little bit unusual, because being the mashbir is an administrative role, and the king shouldn't have to do that, but he insisted on doing it himself so that he could decide exactly how much needs to be given out, and he also insisted that the masters come themselves, that it shouldn't be slaves, because that way he would be able to assess what they really need. And that purpose is something that brought about, that practice is something that brought about this confrontation. It was all part of the Hashgach as well. So that also comes from the unique factors that were being applied here. So that's also a part of the Hashgacha. The Medrash also has a comment that he's the Shalit because he didn't give in to Eshes Potiphar. So the notion that there is a reward for that type of self-control, so that also reflects the idea, which is so different from the perception that the world generally has, that a king is somebody who's powerful and who can conquer other people. But we know that Chazal tell us, the Mishnah in Pirkei Avos, that Ezu Gibor HaKovish Es Yitzro, that the idea of self-mastery is what it is that makes somebody powerful, and therefore the notion of he's a ruler because of that is also a crucial theme. So also just to note that Vayakar Yosef is Echa, Behem Bo Hikiru, so the first has an interesting comment on that, that you have the same kind of word twice here, meaning opposite things. And Vayakar Yosef, that Yosef recognized them, the Heim Lo Hikiruhu, they didn't recognize him. So there, the word means to recognize, but in the previous pasuk, it says, Vayar Yosef as Achav, Yakireim, he recognized them, Vayisnaker Alehem, and he made himself foreign to them. He made himself strange. So it seems like it's the same kind of root, but it's being used in opposite sense. The comment on that?
Well, I was going to say, is there some sort of parallel between the two Haker Naz of last week's Parsha?
So there you have that again, the recurring theme, where there was a parallel between the two of each other. So here again, the notion of Hakara could be, it's like evocative of that. Whether it goes further than that is an interesting thing to consider. But here, the parallel same kind of letters meaning something opposite is what's noteworthy, that he recognized them, Vyakirem, but he's not there, and they didn't recognize him. So why is the same letter meaning the opposite thing? So Hirsch suggests that it's not really such a contradiction, that the idea is that to recognize something is because it's distinct, because it stands out. So to be makir something is because it's different, it's because it's foreign to a certain extent. So the same word meaning opposite things here really connects to the fact that there is a common root. So again, just to try in the interest of time to mention some big themes kind of quickly. So Vayuzka Yosef as a chaloma, so shechalom lahem, v'yomra lahem, v'raglim atem, l'ros es ervas aretz basem. So he remembered his chalomos and he calls them slaves, he calls them spies rather. So the idea that he suspects them of slavery, the Malbim has somewhat of like a comical comment here that it seems like a little bit like a shtick that it says the next pasuk had said v'yomer elav lo adoni v'avadecha bo lishbar ocha, that it sounds like they were just too quick to protest to say that they're there for food, because obviously they're for food, everyone's there for food, so it sounds like it's kind of awkward emphasis to a greater degree that's necessary that they're there for food. So he took that as an additional reason to suspect them and say they were spies. But the idea of Vayuzkar Yosef as a chalomos, so that he remembered his dreams, now that he recognized them, so it's not just that he remembered, but it also, Rav Soloveitchik and others emphasize that it's along the lines of Zachar Soma Shabbos Lakacho, to also appreciate the importance of and to anticipate, and that he saw his dreams as a nevuah and as a responsibility. And that's a part of also understanding what happens in Parshas Vayeshev, the fact that he tells his brothers the dreams, and that makes them suspicious and upset and jealous. So you might think, you know, is he so clueless? Why is he doing that? That's part of what we're discussing here about not trying to provoke jealousy. But the idea is that he felt that this is his responsibility. It's a nevuah that he has in order to serve Klal Yisrael and to serve the world. So this was a part of what he had to allow to play out. So again, this is a very long discussion. There's a lot to say about this, but the Ramban and others talk about the fact that it is so striking that he doesn't ever try to send a message to his father and tell him that he's alive. And there's a lot of possible explanations why that is, a lot of different answers. But one of them is that he just felt he couldn't interrupt this process, that he felt there was a nevuah here that had to play out, and that's also guiding what's going on. There's an interesting discussion. It's also based on Midrashim. It also connects to last week's parsha that he didn't tell his father because he didn't want to embarrass the brothers and make them go through what would happen. And that connects to what we discussed last week. And some use that same phrase again about Noach lo adam lahapal asmo l'kivshon shalesh, that it's preferable to even go through very severe consequences rather than embarrass somebody else. So here he's allowing suffering to happen even to his father at the same time because of perhaps a highly emphasized concern to avoid embarrassing them, which we see playing out in Parsha Yigash. Also, a shorter question because he's worried about the...
Well, I can ask afterwards.
Okay, so we'll do the question later. But I just want to make one more point, then we'll transition into the other events. But the whole theme here of trying to assess what the brothers have learned and how they've grown and how they haven't grown is, again, one of the themes that's going to play out through really the rest of the Sefer, in a sense. And Chazal tell us that ultimately Yosef goes back to the Bor and he gives Hodah to HaKadosh Baruch Hu for the Nes that he was saved from there. So that's interesting on a lot of levels, but I think Rosenzweig discusses there as well, and others discuss that maybe this was a part of the plan, that you can imagine just how awkward that was for the brothers. That here Yosef says, hold on a second, I just got to stop over this place where my life was put in terrible danger, and I was somehow saved, and thank you God for saving me when these people put me in this situation. So you can imagine just how awkward that was for them. But that's also perhaps a part of the growth process. So keeping that in mind, there is also a notion that Yosef goes there to make the bracha. This is something that the Meshech Chachma has an interesting discussion about, and it really connects us to the whole theme of Hanukkah, that Yosef really recognized HaKadosh Baruch Hu's Hashgacha in how everything turned out, and that he ultimately rises to this position not only of personal power, but of being able to make a difference for everybody, for the whole world. And that is clearly miraculous. That is clearly innate. But it's not something that one would make a bracha on, so to speak, because we make a bracha only on overt miracles that are unquestionably miraculous. So the idea of Haboreik Embo Mayim, when he was thrown into the pit, and we were told that there was no water, but Nachashim V'Akrabim Yeshbo, that there were scorpions and snakes there. So the significance of that, the Gemara says in Yevamos, that if somebody falls into a pit with scorpions, then you can assume he's dead. You don't need any further proof, because it's impossible to survive that. So the fact that he could survive is a Neis Nigla. So essentially, to go there and make a bracha on that is something which is a more fitting context, perhaps, for that bracha. But what you have in mind, and that you have in mind at that time, is that really everything is a Neis, and especially the things for which you're more profoundly grateful, but may not have this clear, overt Neis Nigla aspect to it. So you take that moment to focus all that hodah on the overt miracle, but also to include everything else. And that's very much one of the themes of Hanukkah, and the idea that we read this at this time. But we know that there is a question of the relationship between the Neis of Pach HaShemen and the Neis of the war that seems to be more important to us, the fact that we survived this military confrontation and overcame such a challenge, and that's why we're still here today. So to be able to recognize and appreciate that is really what Hanukkah is presumably more about. But that happens through nature, so it's possible for us to forget that that's miraculous and to think that Kochi v'Otzim Yadi, so the whole role of the miracle of the Pach HaShemen, the fact that there was this oil that lasted, which is clearly miraculous, but maybe is less significant than the miracle of the Muhammad. But as the Maharal understands, it's that Neis which helps us to appreciate the miraculous nature of everything else. And that's the context that we're able to celebrate and make a bracha on, so to speak. But really, it's on the whole broader salvation. So too, Yosef is representing, as the point that Meshech Chachma makes along these lines, that to go back to that bor and to say, okay, here's where there was a clearly miraculous salvation, but this is also my hodah for everything else that has happened here. And that's something that we can now fully express and focus on. So with that, it segues into Hanukkah, and with that, we will segue into our Hanukkah Masiba. So, Shkach, and Fred.